Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Jay Gruden's Sunday was not that good. Got smashed by the Patriots, 33-7 at home, in a game where his team went 1-for-11 on third down. Now, I'd say that's pretty embarrassing. I would say that's pretty humiliating, but it's not. It's the Redskins, right? It's expected. It's par for the course. It's who they are. It's what they do every damn Sunday. Again, it's expected. How expected? Adrian Peterson said this about the Patriots defense after the game. Quote, they showed a lot of exotic stuff on film, but against us, they didn't really. You know, it was like, hey, we'll sit back here and we'll see what you guys do and allow you guys to mess up. End quote. That is a tremendous quote. That's brutal. I mean, really brutal, but it's fair. I mean, the guy all but said they didn't even try. They weren't even trying. Why waste any energy trying to beat you scrubs when we know you're just going to beat yourselves anyway? Why put anything else on tape for anybody else to see when we know we're going to knock the crap out of you without even trying? It's pretty insulting. Pretty embarrassing. But then again, what'd you expect? When you've got a 4-0 Patriots team facing off against an 0-4 Redskins team. An 0-4 Redskins team, which is even worse than their record indicates. But you know it's especially bad when people aren't really focusing on the fact that you had a 7-0 lead and then gave up 33 unanswered points. Or when they're not too interested in the return of Colt McCoy. Or the fact that McCoy was sacked 6 times.
Here comes the blitz. McCoy back to pass. He's going to get sacked back at the 30-yard line. That's a massive loss of 11 yards.
Every single time they try to take a shot down the field, he takes a sack.
Redskins radio. And instead of just asking if you'll have a gig the next day, it did provide Gruden the opportunity to drop this zinger.
Nobody's told me anything, and I don't have a concern. I'll just wait and see. My key work's on Monday. Keep working. Go attack the Miami Dolphins and plan on getting our first win next week.
That's what I'm saying. That's how you handle that. With a zinger. If the key works Monday, keep working. Your bad news, though, big dude. The key did not work today. According to the Washington Post, Gruden was called to the facility for a 5 a.m. meeting with Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen. And they fired him. 5 a.m. 5 a.m. They broke him off at 5 in the morning. They kicked him to the curb before sunrise. Lane Kiffin, getting canned on the tarmac at LAX, allegedly, cannot believe how cold that is. 5 a.m.? You couldn't wait until 9 a.m.? When you've been sucking for years, what's another couple of hours? Why make this guy come to the facility? Why even bother with that? Why not just do it over text? Then again, how relieved is Jay Gruden right about now? I mean, sure, he did have to wake up early to get to the facility, but now he can go home, get a nap, and start life without having to go to work at that dump ever again. This guy's second best day as a head coach was getting that job, but his best day ever was losing that job. Now, the crazy thing is, on November 11th of last year, Washington was 6-3. They were in it. They mattered. They were relevant. But they've gone 1-11 since then. And yes, there have been some injuries. And some of the additions have not worked out quite right. But Gruden was nobody's idea of a successful head coach. And things were terrible. One player told Josina Anderson, quote, Gruden is a good dude. But you can tell that he saw the writing on the wall. Players like him. It just got a little too laid back here lately, and sometimes that can bite you in the butt. I've seen some things here I've never seen on other teams. End quote. Seeing things you've never seen on other teams does not sound good. But it does sound exactly like what you'd expect to see in Washington. Like, ever have a vision of a city that you've never been to, but you've always had this vision or this image of what that city might look like? I'm not going to say any cities in particular, but imagine that. Think of a city that you would think would look a certain way, but you've never been there. And then you go there, and it's exactly what you thought it would be. And I don't mean that in a good way either, right? Think about that. It's happened to all of us. Well, that's the Redskins. The Redskins are that piece of crap city that you've never gone to, never wanted to go to, but always had a vision of, but then one day you ended up there and it was exactly what you thought it would be. You know, like you envision a crappy situation with a crappy coach and a crappy organization, and then you get there and you're not even surprised because it's exactly what you thought it would be. I mean, what did you expect? A well-run, well-oiled, perennial playoff contender? Hell no, it's the Redskins. Another player told Anderson, quote, it was time. Too much laziness and stubborn bleep going on around here. Folks not taking bleep serious. Looking at Snapchat during practice. Come on now. You know who I'm talking about. Guys, we're talking about it. We'll see how it goes, end quote. Folks on Snapchat during practice. That's pretty strong. That's a baller's move right there. That's the ultimate sign of disrespect. Firing up Snapchat during practice. Like, could you imagine if that ever went down with, say, the Patriots? Bill Belichick would straight stroke out if any of his guys ever dared to fire up Snapface during practice. But apparently it was going on with the Redskins. And the only thing worse than a player being on Snapchat during a practice would be a coach being on Snapchat during practice. But as bad as all that is, and as terrible as Washington has been this year, and as ugly as last week was with the quarterback situation, know this. The problem is not Jay Gruden. I'm not saying that he didn't deserve to be fired, but I'm saying that's not the issue. That's not the biggest issue. We know what the real problem is. Gruden was definitely a problem. And I've got no problem with him getting fired. But the real problem is the guys who fired him. The real problem, of course, is Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen and the entire trash fire of an organization that they've got going there right now. They have not won a playoff game since 2005. They have finished last or second to last 15 times since Dan Snyder took over. Doing what they did to Gruden at 5 a.m. is the ultimate rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic move.
Iceberg, right ahead!
I mean, hell. Iceberg, straight ahead. Iceberg. Well, you couldn't see that iceberg? Did you turn the freaking boat, man? That iceberg was like as big as the moon. Hell, even then, they couldn't even get the interim coach thing right. This really aggravates me. They gave the title to Bill Callahan instead of three other incredibly well-qualified candidates. That job could have gone to Jim Tomsula. That job could have gone to Tim Jomsula. The job could have gone to Jom Timsula. Totally jacked that up. But Jay Gruden is not the reason why people are not going to games anymore. Jay Gruden was not the reason why that was practically a home game for New England. Jay Gruden is not the reason they've been so bad for so long. That's on the owner. That's on the president. They aren't winners. In fact, by definition, they're losers. The team is nearly 15 games, 50 below 500 since Snyder took over. Bruce Allen is 59-89-1 since he arrived. So how is a new head coach going to change any of that? Why is Allen going to be involved in hiring a new coach? Better yet, why hasn't he been fired yet? And by the way, I am aware of the videos from a few years back that leaked this week. Interesting timing, don't you think? And if the organization had anything to do with that video or videos being leaked, that is the dirtiest pool ever. I'm not saying they did. I'm saying if they did, that would be the dirtiest pool ever. I'm saying if they did, just fire the guy. If you're going to fire the guy, fire the guy. Would anybody even know or care if you did? Hey, so why does Men's Health call the Peloton bike, quote, the best cardio machine on the planet, end quote? I'll tell you why. Because it is. I have one. I know this is true. Now let me give you even more reasons. You can't find a workout that keeps you engaged, right? Well, Peloton is an immersive cardio experience with real-time features that will always keep you coming back. You can get a great workout in right from your home for less than the cost of a studio class. Trust me, I've had my Peloton for a few years now. I love it. Here's what I love about it. One, the size. It's compact. The bike can fit in virtually any space in your home, no matter how small. I had it in my home gym. Now it's actually in my home office. Plus, the value is incredible. One subscription is all you need to get unlimited classes for the entire family. There is no commute. There are no reservations. Thousands of rides that you can take live or on demand at any time, and I do both, all for less than the cost of a studio class. And you can get in your zone with curated music designed to move and motivate you. Hip-hop, country, Latin, pop, whatever you're in the mood for. And all sorts of different classes. And right now, Peloton is offering a limited time deal. Get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and get a great cardio workout from your home. Go to onepeloton.com. Onepeloton.com. Use the promo code Rome to get started. Once again, I bought my Peloton myself long before they became a partner on this podcast. I am in love with this product. Onepeloton.com. Promo code Rome. Jason Lockenfora. Jason, how you doing? Good to have you.
What's going on, buddy? Long time no see.
Long time no see. In fact, you and I saw each other yesterday on the NFL Today. That's what you're talking about. 24 hours later, are you at all surprised, Jason, that Jay Gruden was fired this morning?
No. The only surprise is that he lasted, into a sixth season, which that's an eternity by Redskins coaching standards. I mean, they should induct him into the Ring of Honor right now, Romy. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to surpass that anytime soon. He was the one coach to get two contracts out of Dan Snyder. But that relationship has soured for quite some time, really dating back to even last season. There's been clashes about the staff and defensive coordinators in particular. I mean, remember, I was reporting in the spring that Dan Snyder was having his own interviews with potential defensive coordinators before they fired Greg Minuski. And they didn't fire Greg Minuski in the end. So, that happened. The coach and the GM, Doug Williams, aren't aware often when big moves are made, trading for Alex Smith and then giving him a huge new contract when you didn't have to. There were some philosophical differences about the direction of the franchise and where they were headed back in the spring. So to people close to that situation, people close to Dan Snyder, people close to Jay Gruden, this is not a surprise at all, and as we talked about on the NFL Today a couple of Sundays ago, expect Jay Gruden to end up running the Raiders offense in Vegas by next season as a part of his brother John's staff.
Jason Lockenfora joining us. All right, Jason, you've also raised the idea that Dan Snyder would like to have Mike Tomlin as head coach.
Sir.
How interested would Tomlin be in that gig, and how likely is it that he could end up there?
Well, he's got 1 year on his Steelers deal. It's hard to handicap it. It's not without precedent that teams acquire coaches. It's happened several times in the past. Hasn't happened all that recently, right? I guess John Gruden, going from Oakland to Tampa is the last one that leaps out to me, although the Browns and 49ers had discussions about a Jim Harbaugh trade not that long ago. Would he be open to it? I don't know. There's some close to him who feel a change of scenery wouldn't be the end of the world. He'd certainly get more money and more power in Washington than any coach would have in Pittsburgh. It's just not their model. He has ties to Doug Williams, the GM, and Bruce Allen, the team president, from their time together in Tampa. And he's got 1 year left on his deal, so it's not like he signed, a three-year extension or something last year. Would the Rooneys entertain something sort of outside the box like this? Some would say no, and their history might say no, but there's others who would point out, well, they did just give up a lot of draft capital to take Devin Bush 10th overall, right? And they did just trade a one for Minka Fitzpatrick that, now that they're down to their third quarterback, might be a pretty high one. And, Ben's not getting any younger, and would there be a natural time to make some some changes. The GM, Kevin Colbert, didn't sign an extension. So we'll see, Jim. I will certainly be paying a lot of attention to this in the coming weeks. I can tell you that much.
Jason LaCanfora is an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. Jason, you mentioned the Steelers. You've covered the NFL for a really long time. What was your reaction when you saw that hit that Mason Rudolph took yesterday against the Ravens?
It's unfortunate. You hate to see anything like that. Obviously, Earl Thomas has to do a much better job of staying away from the head and neck region. And this, in this situation, you know, Rudolph was even more vulnerable because he was getting hit from behind. He was already sort of elevated and you know, taking on one impact when he got, you know, blown up from the other direction. You know, thankfully, you know, he was able to kind of walk off, at least with some help, and released from the hospital last night. Everything I've heard, you know, is a diagnosis of a concussion, no other medical issues that the Steelers were aware of last night. I'm sure a big fine is forthcoming for Earl Thomas. It's unfortunate for Mason Rudolph, obviously, for numerous reasons. You know, no timetable yet on when he comes back. Devlin Hodges, though, I got to say, he has some Gardner Minshew in him. Like, I was intrigued by what I saw. He seemed fearless. He seemed very confident. And he has, like, a little energy and a spark to him. You know, the Steelers took a flyer on him out of Sanford. He may get a chance to play a little bit here in the ongoing year, the backup quarterback, Jim. And I don't know, man. They're a little bit intrigued by him. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, he had some it. He certainly had some it and gave them a bit of a spark. You hate to see a guy get an opportunity like that because that was such a terrifying hit.
Ooh.
But I think you're right. He showed something. Jason LaCanfora, my guest. You also tweeted last night, and I quote, "Frank Reich is a bad man." How impressed were you, Jason, with how the Colts showed up last night in KC?
Not surprised because this has been their MO. You know, they are a tough out, and when they're down, they don't stay down long, whether that's through, you know, a coach sort of saying, "I'm going to take the job," and then bailing on them, you know, whether that's a kid who some would say, he's not a kid anymore, I think of these guys as rookies, but, you know, a young quarterback in Andrew Luck who decided to retire right before the season. You know, they've had some adversity, and obviously they didn't play their A game a week ago against the Raiders. And I just love Frank Reich's willingness to do whatever it takes to win this yard, to win this play, to win this series, to win this game, you know, and then we'll worry about next week. And, you know, Jacoby Brissett has thrown a lot of touchdowns this year, but that wasn't in the cards yesterday, and they wanted to keep Mahomes off the field, and they wanted to play sort of old-school brass knuckles, you know, 1970s Big Ten football. They wanted to outman you at the point of attack, and they did that. You know, I thought when Luck went down, I still said, hey, if I'm a betting man, I'm going to Vegas and taking the Colts to win that division. I think they'll win 10-plus games. The coach is smart enough to guide them through this, and Jacoby Brissett is a gamer. And I like their chances in that division. And I don't rule out them, you know, getting a top two seed. The AFC could get pretty crazy here. I mean, why not the Colts?
It was a wild weekend. Jason LaCanfora joins me for another moment or two. Jason, in your news and notes segment yesterday that you and I did for the NFL on CBS, we talked about the trade deadline coming up.
Yeah.
And we talked about the possibility of Denver having a fire sale. Then they go out and they beat the Chargers. So how do you think Denver approaches the time from now until the deadline? Does that change anything?
No, I mean, they're obviously probably not going to be trading any pending free agents and engaging in Von Miller trade talks this week. It won't stop teams from calling. They still have an uphill climb. You know, Joe Flacco is not their quarterback of the future. And could they end up having a respectable season? Perhaps. But are they going to get to the playoffs? No. And do they need to make cold, hard, calculated decisions about their future? Yes. Do they need draft capital in the worst way possible? Yes. The offensive line is not good. They're going to need pass catchers. And the bottom line, Jim, is that guys like Chris Harris, Derek Wolfe, Emmanuel Sanders, they're not going to end up re-signing there anyway. So I do expect them to be sellers. Will they go wholesale and include a guy like Von Miller if the value's right? No one knows the answer to that yet. But they are going to be given myriad opportunities to consider that between now and October 29th.
And Jason, finally, it does not look like Atlanta is going to have a, quote, respectable season.
No.
They're 1-4 after that humiliating loss to Houston, 53-32. JLC, when you consider that nearly every team is able to get pressure on Deshaun Watson, how bad is it for the Falcons that they were unable to do so?
Bad. bad. That Atlanta, they just can't put it together for any period of time. The problem had been coming out of games sleepwalking, you know, coming into, you know, entering games sleepwalking. They played a pretty good first half yesterday and then got absolutely steamrolled in the second half. They are just non-competitive for long stretches every week, and that's not what's required in professional football. You know, that's the expectations are much higher than that, and this team thought, because they were getting healthier this year after all the injuries of a year ago, that they were going to take off. And instead, they look worse in many ways than they did last year, particularly the defense. And that's Dan Quinn's bread and butter. You know, I don't think he's sort of on the minute-to-minute high alert that Jay Gruden's been on the last few weeks. But I also don't know anybody who talks to Arthur Blank who thinks that owner is going to be patient too much longer. He doesn't want to do something in season, but go check out their schedule. They haven't even hit the meat of the schedule yet. Go look week 7 to 14. Murderer's Row is awaiting, and there's a lot of people kind of looking at that situation saying at some point Arthur Blank may want to get a jump on finding his next guy.
He is an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. He appears every single Sunday on the NFL Today. Good friend of the program, Jason Lockenfora. Jason, really appreciate it. Had a great time seeing you yesterday. I will see you in a few weeks.
All right. Can't wait, buddy. Look forward to it. Thank you.
Clones, what do we want when we're craving protein or we need some more energy? Not bars. Not sugary snacks. Not an energy drink. No, we want beef. Pure and simple. Where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your old man's jerky. Shriveled, dry, tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. It's tender, it's tasty, it's not tough. And why is it so good? Because of the company. Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for its relentless commitment to quality. In other words, they take smoked beef very seriously. You can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in 4 amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach. So look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. And if you don't see it for whatever reason, ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? If yesterday taught us anything at all, it's that nobody knows anything. I've said it before. Let me say this again right now. When it comes to the NFL, nobody knows jack. The Saints are 3-0 without their Hall of Fame quarterback. But I call that. Sort of. The Panthers are 3-0 with their backup. Nobody called that. Ever. And speaking of the Panthers, remember when some dopes thought that Christian McCaffrey might not be able to handle the workload of an NFL running back? 231 yards from scrimmage, and 3 touchdowns later, and that take goes right up there next to wide receiver Lamar Jackson.
Jackson?
Another horrible take. I mean, going back to McCaffrey, does this look like a dude who can't handle an NFL workload?
Allen in the shotgun, first and goal from the 5, no score. Handoff goes to McCaffrey, middle crowded, stiff arm takes it to the right. And somersaults into the end zone for the touchdown.
Panthers radio. His teammate Brian Burns said, quote, he's probably like Thor's long-lost brother or something like that. The man's not human. I've never seen somebody jump over a person and make that person hit the other person. I've never seen that ever before in my life. So again, in a locker room of freaky individuals athletically, for one guy to say about another guy, he's not human, that speaks to just how dramatically different this guy is. And yet, this is the guy that a lot of people thought could not handle an NFL workload. Yeah, right. But he can do things like this.
First and 10, Panthers. Backed up deep. Handoff up the middle. McCaffrey running free. Unbelievable. 30, 35, 40, 45, 50 across midfield. Can someone drag him down? 20 to the 15, the 10, the 5. McCaffrey takes it home.
Yeah, because you're going to run that guy down from behind. The crazy thing about football is it gives you moments like that. Amazing moments, awesome moments. You know, get up off your couch moments. But then there are moments like the one involving Steelers quarterback Mason Rudolph against Baltimore. We talked about this. If for whatever reason you haven't seen it, he was scrambling out of the pocket, looking to complete a pass to James Washington when he got hit by Earl Thomas and Brandon Carr. Again, if you haven't seen it, it's not a bad thing that you haven't seen it. you might want to keep avoiding it because it's really scary. I mean, one of the scarier things you're going to see, the stuff of nightmares, that kind of scary. Lineman Alejandro Villanueva ran over to him to appear to check to make sure that he was still breathing. That's scary. He said, quote, his eyes were open and he was breathing, but he wasn't there. He wasn't moving. I knew it was a medical emergency. Juju Smith-Schuster. I mean, how many times have you seen a guy on the field react to an athlete getting hurt? React the way he did. He was overcome with emotion.
I heard of situations where, you know, the person's not moving at all, or doesn't get up. And, you know, and I was just praying to God that, you know, he gets up and he's our quarterback and he's our guy. I'm praying for a speedy recovery.
Like he thought that he might be unable to get up. Or maybe even worse. Like you've got one teammate rushing over to make sure he's still breathing. And another one who immediately starts to pray that he's going to get up. And again, a reminder of how tough, how violent, how dangerous that game is. And this is why some of you push back when I do this, but this is why I almost always side with every player. In fact, I do, like literally every time, side with every player getting as much money as they possibly can. Every single time for that reason. Because the game can be over in an instant. Hell, their career can be over in an instant. Their life can be over in an instant. And then the crazy thing is, when something like that happens, the game has to continue in an instant. Like right back to work. And while none of it feels like it matters after you see that, all of the games keep going. Like somehow you've got transition from seeing that hit to the Broncos and Chargers. You know, back to something else that was mentioned. The Broncos spent the first quarter of the season being in a, quote, world of suck.
Living in a world of suck.
They were living in a world of suck.
Living in a world of suck.
Guys counting the weeks until they could be done there. Living in a world of suck. There's embracing the suck, and then there's living in a world of suck. Living and yet there they were blowing out the Chargers in the first half. And then hanging on to get their first win of the season, 2013. Or how about the Colts losing to the Raiders at home, then going on the road, missing roughly half their team, and taking it to Kansas City in Kansas City. That was a huge performance. And I'm saving the best for last. About the Raiders. Alvin, can you hit me with some music? Because those same Oakland Raiders that went into Indianapolis and shocked the Colts, then got on a plane with a head coach who gets vertigo if he's on a plane for too long, flew to London where everybody knew exactly what was going to happen. They were going to show up and get humiliated by Khalil Mack and the Bears. Like, we may not know anything about the NFL, but we knew that was going to happen. It was going to be the beatdown to end all beatdowns. The only question was how many strip sacks Mack was going to end up with. Oh, and there was a beatdown, all right. Except it was Oakland beating down Chicago. The Raiders were up 17-0 before the Bears knew what hit them. 17 straight points in the second quarter against a defense that has caused everybody immense problems. Oakland goes into halftime with a 3-score lead, and the world is shocked. And then the Raiders went Raider and promptly gave up 21 straight in the third quarter. And then everybody thought the world was right once again. The Raiders are going to blow this, and everybody's going to clown them. Except they didn't. Late in the fourth quarter, down 21-17, they go on a 13-play 97-yard drive, capped off by this.
It's a power eye look from the two. Under center, here comes Jacobs. Jumps, dives over the top, touchdown! Touchdown, Raiders! Celebration explodes on the sideline.
Raiders Radio Network. Oakland rushed for 169 yards and 3 touchdowns against one of the best run defenses in the NFL. And they did it while missing their top wide receiver. So it should have been that much easier to stop their run. Yet they kept on running, and they kept on imposing their will, and they ran it right down Chicago's throat. Man, that was macho. And I've taken more than my share of runs at the Raiders. That was badass. That was macho. Really impressive. Almost as impressive is the fact that the Raiders' offensive line kept Khalil Mack pretty much under wraps. He had 3 tackles. He had a quarterback hit. He had a fumble recovery. It's a good game. But nowhere near the dominant showing that we all expected. Now, let's be clear about this. As awesome as that win was for the Raiders, and further evidence that revenge games rarely turn out to be what you expect, that doesn't mean that trading Mack was a good idea. It's still a terrible idea. But they got themselves a really sweet win. A really nice win. And I've got to imagine, Raider fan. And another thing. I got to imagine, Raider fan, that autumn wind has got to sound pretty damn good right about now. That's got to be sweet. I did not see that coming. Didn't see it coming, even after the win against the Colts. You know, sometimes when you have like Victory Monday or you get a day off after a win, how about you chase a great win in Indy over an even better win, arguably, against Chicago in London? And instead of a victory day, how about you get a victory week? How about that same coach with the vertigo, Chunk, giving the team a week off?
I don't have a disco in here. I don't have a disco. Well, let's all start dancing. I say this, man. I'm 56 years old. That's the most fun I've ever had tonight, man. I am so proud of you. You have no idea. I mean, we've been through a roller coaster already, but what you proved today is one thing. You can beat anybody, anywhere, on any time zone. You got it. We're going to have a great flight home. We have some injuries. I want everybody to have a great bye week. You have a whole week off.
Hey, man, they earned it. How awesome would that be? You're in London. You just shocked the world, did the Bears, going to get yourself a great flight home with whatever that involves. And then you get an entire week off in the middle of the season.
And you know,
I wonder if Raider Mike gave himself a week off after that.
And you know,
I've never heard Chunk so fired up. I'm 56 years old. Quote, I'm 56 years old, and I've never had so much fun. Tyler Kepner is my guest. Tyler, always good to have you on. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How are you?
Good, really good. All right, let me start in the Dodgers and Nationals series. You were in Washington last night for that.
Yep.
Washington had got a 2-run home run from Juan Soto in the first. They were leading 2-1. Tyler going to the sixth. Knowing they had Max Scherzer going in game 4 today, what was your sense as to what the mood in the park was like at that point in the game?
Well, it was pretty confident because, you know, they had it scripted just as they wanted. You know, if they could have said before the game that you would get 5 innings from Anibal Sanchez and a 2-1 lead, they would take it. Now, you could argue maybe they should have tried to keep going with him. But at the time, bringing in Patrick Corbin looked like the right move. I mean, he's one of their best pitchers. He did pretty well, even though we lost game 1. And you figure that he can get you through that 6th, 7th inning to the back end of the bullpen. But instead, the Dodgers had the greatest postseason inning they've ever had. Literally their first 7-run inning in all of their postseasons, going back over 100 years. So it just completely blew up on the Nationals.
Tyler Kepner, it absolutely did. For those who did not see it, Sanchez gets taken out. Corbin comes in. Cody Bellinger leads off the inning with a single. The next 2 batters strike out, but then David Freese pinch hits for Gavin Lux. He singles to right. Bellinger goes to third. Russell Martin follows that up with a 2-run double. The floodgates open up. L.A. scores 7 with 2 outs. 7 with 2 outs. What were you thinking as you saw that inning unfold?
Well, it was crazy because all the run scoring hits were with 2 strikes. So Corbin was so close to getting out of it, And you're right. I mean, you know, yeah, the Bellinger hit, but then strikeout, and, you know, and then Freeze hits a little grounder through the shift in right, so you don't worry too much about that. Martin gets down two strikes, but the Dodgers just kept battling, and that's what they do. They finally – they've seen a lot of Corbin, not only in game one, but a lot of them have seen him a lot in the NL West. So they took so many good at-bats, they were able to read that slider of his, which is so good. And when he got it up a little bit, they pounced. So really professional at-bats and just a great example of what the Dodgers do, which is the ability to counter any move out of the bullpen by flipping their lineup with professional hitters like Freeze and Chris Taylor and Kike Hernandez. And there you go. I mean, the Dodgers can counteract whatever you want to do out of your bullpen.
Tyler Kepner is my guest. You know, now one more thought about them hitting as well as they do with two strikes. David Freeze said afterwards, quote, "You look at the best guys that have ever played this game, they look like they like two strikes. I watched Albert Pujols do it for 10 years living in St. Louis and playing with him. Guys like that, it's incredible," end quote. So when you're facing a lineup of guys who almost like hitting with two strikes, how much more pressure does that put on the opposing pitching staff?
Yeah, it was. But you figure, and you know, the Nationals, to their credit, have managed this aggressively, and I think, you know, they're trying not to repeat some of their mistakes they've made in the past, you know, by sticking with maybe overmatched middle relievers or stuff. I mean, they're going for it. They've got their best guys out there, but even that doesn't always work. We saw it worked great with Scherzer the other night in the eighth inning, and then they survived the rocky ninth with Hudson, but they had the matchup they wanted, and yes, it does put a lot of pressure on the pitcher. You got to be perfect and really fine. And when you make a couple mistakes, you know, they're going to capitalize. But they had the right guys in the right spot. It just didn't work out.
Tyler, it seems to me that when things go well, Dave Roberts doesn't really get any credit. And if things don't go well, he's always the first guy that people want to single out. What do you make of how he handled his bench in that inning?
Oh, I think it was great. I mean, I think that's how the Dodgers are built. Sometimes they get a little too cute, maybe. Like, you can look back and say, you know, the elimination game in the World Series last year, game five, that Bellinger didn't play, and they had Kike Hernandez batting third and everything. So sometimes they can do maybe get a little too matchup heavy, but a lot of times it really does work, and it gives them a huge edge. I mean, it's hard to do what they're doing. Seven straight division titles and going for the third straight NL crown. It's just because they haven't won a World Series. It shouldn't take away from just how deep this lineup is and how good Roberts is at using it.
Tyler Kepner is my guest. All right, so how different does the series feel to you after the sixth inning with the Dodgers going to today's game with a chance to end it as opposed to facing Max Scherzer to stay alive?
Well, it's just completely flips, right, John? I mean, think about, you know, if the Nats had won, then tonight they've got a chance to close it out with their guy on the mound. But instead, now they're just fighting for their lives. That's why the division series is so fun, because it's a lightning round, and things can change like that. I mean, what a day in baseball. We got four potential series-ending games today, so a lot on the line. We could have the LCS set by the end of the night. I don't think we will. I think someone will survive. But yeah, it just completely changes it, because the Dodgers, like they were saying, hey, you know, like, we got a shot to close this thing out. Worst case, we're going back home for game five and we can win it there. But the worst case, if you were facing Scherzer, facing elimination, is much, much worse. So yeah, it's a big, big game tonight, but more so for Washington than LA.
Tyler Kepner is joining us for a few more moments. Now, you and I have talked about pitching in the past. In fact, you literally wrote the book on it, K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches. Knowing that, how do you explain what Justin Verlander has done over the course of the season and then in game one of the ALDS?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, he has really when you say a pitcher's adapted, you know, you think, I go more to guys like Frank Tanana or CeCe Sabathia, who lose their stuff and then change the kind of pitcher they are. Verlander has adapted, but he's still kind of keeping the same stuff. He's adapted to understanding that it's more of a, even more of a strikeout game now, and to, you know, to hear out what the Astros say about how to use your pitches and then just execute with brutal efficiency, attacking these guys. And he's been amazing. I mean, one hit the other night, it's either guy, him or Cole, would be a historic kind of Cy Young season. They both struck out 300. Verlander had more innings and gave up fewer hits, but Cole had more strikeouts with slightly better ERA. I mean, it is scary to watch those two in tandem, and it doesn't always work. right? I mean, we saw when the Phillies brought in Halliday and Lee and they didn't win a championship. There's many examples of that. But sometimes you get that special season, whether it's a Koufax Drysdale or, you know, a Johnson Schilling. And this really could be one of those years because these guys are just at the top of their game here in October, and it's a lot of fun to watch.
Tyler Kepner joining us. Listen, it doesn't always work. Stacking aces has not guaranteed a World Series in recent years. So if you're the Astros, how do you go about trying to avoid that recent trend? What should they do?
Well, it's not going to be easy because, you know, certainly the Yankees, if they get to that round, are tough and can hit. But I do feel like the Yankees have holes in their swings that great pitchers can exploit. And let's not forget Greinke either. You know, the Astros bullpen, it looks vulnerable. It looks, you know, but I think it may only be in comparison to the starters because they did have the third best bullpen ERA this year. They've struggled a little bit in the first two games, so maybe that's how you get to them. But, you know, so far the formula's worked. I think the problem will be if the Yankees or some team can somehow succeed in fouling off a bunch of pitches and getting those guys out of there and getting to that bullpen. But, you know, on paper, those guys should be good enough. You know, Presley and Harris and Ozuna had a really good year. So the Astros look great right now. But, you know, then again, the Yankees are also really good, and so are the Dodgers. There are three super teams right now, Jim. And, you know, if they all could wind up in the LCS, they all should wind up in the LCS probably. And then we'll see where it takes us. But it's a fascinating time in baseball.
So before you go, Tyler, if that's the way that goes, and most do believe that the Astros and the Yankees are on a collision course, how do you see that series going?
Well, I think in the end, I would go with the Astros only because of what we've seen the last couple of years, which is that ability to both slug and make contact is usually what has won lately. You know, certainly the Yankees could win. I mean, they're very, very good. I wrote the other day that the Astros are better than they were in 17, and they are, but so are the Yankees, as a lot of readers reminded me. So, you know, the Yankees have a really deep lineup as well. I just feel like Houston is deeper overall. Their lineup just doesn't end. It's going to be an epic series, but I would give Houston the slight edge just because I feel like there's fewer moves that Hinch has to make. I mean, if his starters go deep in the games, which they tend to do, there's just fewer margin, you know, fewer ways he can mess things up. Whereas the Yankees can, you know, you bring in Ottavino, you bring in Canely, you bring in, you know, Britton and Green and these guys, like one of them might have a bad day and that could ruin the game like it did last night with Corbin.
I agree with you. Epic, epic potential matchup, but I think the Yankees are definitely looking up at Houston. I think Houston's got the edge there. Tyler Kepner is a national baseball writer for the New York Times, also the author of K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches. Tyler, great to have you back. Thanks so much for doing that.
All right, thanks a lot, Jim. Always like joining you.
Hey, clones, if you're anything like me, you're always looking for a better, faster, cleaner source of natural energy and nutrition. Good news is, I've done the legwork for you. I've done the research. I found it. I'm talking about Athletic Greens. Athletic Greens Ultimate Daily is the obsessively researched, all-in-one nutritional support powder containing 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food ingredients. Just one scoop contains essential prebiotics, probiotics, digestive enzymes, and more, all of which support your gut health, energy levels, and immune system. It's that easy. Every morning before breakfast, I just mix in a scoop into 10 ounces of water, and I get a jump start on feeling my best the entire day. I feel like I'm doing something good for myself every single morning. And if you're on the road or you're away from home, the travel packs make it so easy to keep up your healthy routine because you don't need to tote around a bunch of pill bottles. Simply put, Athletic Greens can help you feel amazing every day, no matter what life throws your way. So start every day by squaring away your nutritional needs so you're ready for whatever comes your way. And right now you can jump on over to athleticgreens.com/Rome, athleticgreens.com/Rome. Claim our special offer, 20 free travel packs valued at $79 with your first purchase. athleticgreens.com/Rome. Athletic Greens, start your day right. Amazing things will follow. All right, so here's a matchup I never thought that I'd be breaking down on a Monday, especially coming off of a college football Saturday and an NFL Sunday. The matchup being the University of Kansas versus Calvin Broadus Jr., a.k.a. Snoop. Snoop Doggy. Snoop Doggy Doggy Dog. Snoop. I never thought that I'd talk about that, yet here we are. Here the bleep we are. Because over the weekend, KU had Snoop in the house as a special guest performer at their annual Late Night in the Fog event. And a major pull by KU. Major pull by KU. Now, if you don't know what Late Night in the Fog is, allow me to read directly from their website. Quote, Late Night in the Fog is the official kickoff to the basketball season. It's one part scrimmage, one part talent show, and two parts shenanigans. End quote. That's so good. The only thing better than one part shenanigans is two parts shenanigans. I've always said that. You know that. What am I known for? Oh, yeah, Rome. He's that guy who always says, one part shenanigans is good, two part shenanigans is better. Yeah, you give me more shenanigans. That's a great word, shenanigan. Give me more shenanigans. The more shenanigans, the better. If I have a choice between one part shenanigans and two parts shenanigans, go ahead and give me 10 parts shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
I'll take my chances. Give me more shenanigans. Apparently, KU is only interested, however, in family-friendly shenanigans. Because even though they booked one of the least family-friendly performers, and you know what you're going to get with Snoop, and Snoop's not changing for you, nor should he. He's Snoop. Even though they booked him, they still had expectations that Snoop would clean it up for the room full of students, faculty, and fans. Like, sell out for them. Spoiler alert, he did not. In addition to the parental advisory language, Snoop also fired a money gun that dispensed bills with his face on it and was surrounded by dancers on stripper poles. And all this took place on the court at Allen Fieldhouse. And KU apparently was not happy. Not happy at all. The athletic director, Jeff Long, said in a statement after the event, quote, we apologize to anyone that was offended by the Snoop Dogg performance at Late Night. We made it clear to the entertainers' managers that we expected a clean version of the show. I take full responsibility for not understanding what acrobatic dancers are in today's entertainment world and offer my personal apology to anyone who was offended. We strive to create a family atmosphere at Kansas, and we fell short of that this evening. End quote. Man, that's some kind of statement. That is some kind of statement. So you mean to tell me that a university or a basketball program being accused by the NCAA of lacking institutional control, lacked institutional control at a, quote, talent show. Wow. First the NCAA and now the shenanigans. Y'all are losing control. Institutional control. The best part, though, is them inviting Snoop and then expecting Snoop not to be Snoop. The guy smokes weed for a living and has 17 albums out, none of which are clean. Did you guys not Google this beforehand? Or just check to see what the whippersnappers are listening to these days? Did you guys mean to book Will Smith instead?
Help out your mom and dad by getting a job so you can help pay for school supplies. Woohoo, say ho! Wipe your shoes on the mat when you come in the house. Someone just clean that floor. Woohoo, say what, what? Ha ha!
Is that what you thought you were getting? The AD also referenced not knowing what, quote, acrobatic dancers were in today's entertainment world. That's in reference to the fully clothed dancers who are using stripper poles during the show. And maybe it's just me, but when you see the production crew wheel out four gigantic stripper poles ahead of that performance, maybe you ask what they're for if you don't already know. But playing dumb afterwards is pretty weak when stripper poles are the biggest and most obvious prop ever. Hey, what are you doing with those stripper poles? What can you do with stripper poles? Is this the part of the act where the firefighters slide down and come in and put out a fire? No, those are fire station poles. Those aren't stripper poles. Are Batman and Robin coming down those poles? No. No, Alfred's not here. You're not in the Batcave. Snoop's coming. Well, to nobody's surprise, anywhere, the students loved the show. Of course, it was Snoop and Lawrence. That's an all-time get. Instead of being stoked about it and taking a victory lap around the office, the KU brass is all worked up that the guy they hired did exactly what everybody knew he was going to do. Be Snoop Dogg. Congratulations, KU. You played yourself.
Congratulations. You played yourself.
What did you expect? You hire Snoop, you're going to get Snoop. It's the least surprising thing in the world. Yet they're the only ones who didn't know. Hey, whoa, wait a minute. Are those strippers coming down that stripper pole? Wait, are those strippers working a stripper pole? Yes, it's a stripper pole. Silk Bra, what's up?
Bra, greetings from the Fairmont Grand in Del Mar, bra. I am not in HB. I had to get away from the air show, bra, because the Thunderbirds and their F-16s flying over my house at 1,000 feet is no bueno, bra. So I had to bust out down to beautiful Del Mar, so I'm at the spa listening to you, bra. It's been a great show today, bra.
Wow, dude, look at you, man. That's a big-time spot. You know, I've talked about that spot in the past. How's that treating you?
Oh, it's beautiful. I had to step out because the spa pool area, bra, no cell phones allowed, bra, so I'm standing out by the golf course. There's a big palm here with a huge crow in it, so if you hear it, bra, just ignore it, bro. I feel like Edgar Allan Poe out here.
Yeah, dude, I remember I was there once. I don't know if they still do it because they changed hands, but there used to be a time where, like, they had these speakers underwater. You should hit that pool, bro, and see if you can hear the music underneath the water because they do that too.
I'm going to wait till the show's over, and then I'm going to do that, bro.
Or listen to the show underwater.
All right.
All right,
you got that, bro.
Nice job. All right, bro. Way to humble brag me. All right, so that's Silk Bra letting us all know that he's in Del Mar. Not only in Del Mar, but at the Fairmont. Because he had to get away from the air show in Huntington Beach. And then he couldn't be at the pool with his blower, so he went to the golf course. That's not even a humble brag. That's a straight brag.
Bruh.
Straight brag. Silk brag. 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 Bruh. Silk brag. 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 I can offer you the next best thing to Walker Buehler. Not Clayton Kershaw. Not Dave Roberts. Not Kenley Jansen. No? Matt in L.A. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Romulus James, thanks for the vine. From Los Angeles to LaGrange. From Carl Anderson Staples Center Green Room to Greenland, you're welcome. The Matt in L.A. montage in conjunction with the media giant that is CBS Sports Net got you hyped up. Like Chunk at Buckingham Palace feasting on a spread of London broil, taters, and mash. More pumped up than Russell Martin going yard and Gaskando Rodney actually getting through an inning without getting lit up like James Kelly's jack-o'-lantern dome piece. Romeo, you asked if Dodger fans were sweating. Our offense having about as much plate discipline as Ham Gino or Billy Clarkson at second lunch. And I was sweating it until I remembered the Dodgers got that jungle karma in their back pockets like some school or Copenhagen. Memo to the playoff field. The Dodgers have awakened. So watch out, because here we are. Here the bleep we are. War, it's Rick Eisenhower taking a lap in his WW2 biplane at the HB Air Show. Unwar, Jeff in Richmond trying to eat the whole damn menu at his local coffee shop. Outro!
Boy, Matt Neller is fired up today.
Good night now!